Okay, so just a quick note before we start. I'm going to try something a little weird in this podcast. We'll try it for the first episode, and if I get negative feedback, I'll stop it. Where I'm going to pronounce certain Hebrew quotes from the Psukim in as archaic an accent as I can, in order to sort of defamiliarize the text. I think it might be interesting and fun. And if it's just weird and pretentious, please tell me so I don't continue to do it in future episodes. Thank you. And without further ado, here's the first episode of a podcast on Sefer Shmuel, entitled Power Reveals. More than power corrupts, power reveals. Robert Caro. The king is afraid. He sees his enemies amassing for battle, and his heart trembles with fear. Desperate, he tries to turn to God, but God will not answer him. Not by normal means, not by dreams, not by prophets. God will not answer him, no matter how desperate he gets. And the king is getting pretty desperate. There is a way he can get an answer, not from God per se, but from something that will give him some sense of resolution to his anxiety because he's so desperate. He doesn't even care if it's good news or bad news. He just wants to know so maybe he can. No, are you crazy? Besides, didn't you get rid of anyone who can do that? No, you can't. You shouldn't. You won't. But the possibility gnaws at him. It won't leave. And maybe he is going crazy, after all. So the king orders his courtiers to find for him a witch, a woman who practices the forbidden and persecuted art of summoning the dead, a practice that makes her liable for the death penalty, a punishment the king once zealously enforced. But not too zealously, apparently, because they have found one left in the village of Endor. So the king disguises himself, removing the stately clothes of monarchy and donning the clothes of an ordinary man. Something he himself used to be until this role was thrust upon him. He tried to hide from it then, and he hides from it now. He arrives at Endor at the witch's residence and knocks. The door opens. The king addresses her. Kosmi na liba o vahali li et asher amar elayich. Please divine for me with magic and raise for me who I tell you. She responds in a panic. Don't you know how dangerous this is? The king has banned such practices. Is this a trap? The king promises her that she won't be harmed. She does not seem to know that he is the only person who could have made such a promise. Satisfied, the woman asks the king, Et mi a'aleh elach? Who shall I raise for you? And the king responds, Et Shmuel ha'aleh li. Shmuel, raise for me. Shmuel, who thrust this role upon him when he didn't want it, and snatched it away as soon as he did. Shmuel, whose advice he always desperately sought but rarely listened to. That Shmuel. And the witch does whatever incantation she does, and suddenly she screams, because Shmuel raised up from the dead, standing right before her. She points an accusing finger at the king. Lama rimi tani vata Sha'ul? Why have you deceived me? You are Sha'ul. Sha'ul, the king of all of Israel, famed warrior, killer of thousands, hunter of witches and mediums, is indeed the one who has shown up at her door demanding to raise up the dead. But Sha'ul can't see what she sees, and he has no time to answer for his betrayal of her trust. Al tiri ki ma ra'is. Don't be afraid. What do you see? Elohim ra'isi olim min ha'aretz. I see a divine being coming up from the earth. Ma ta'aro. What is his appearance? Ish zaken olev hu otem me'il. An old man coming up wrapped in a robe. Yep, that's Shmuel. Always with the robe. Why was he so attached to that robe? But he always had that robe. And she begins to channel Shmuel, speaking to Sha'ul. And Shmuel, well, he's got very definite feelings about these proceedings.
Oh. Lo Mahir Ganstam in the Isle of Ulfith. Why have you disturbed me to raise me up?
And that's Shmuel. He's never happy to see you. But Shaul is happy? Well, not happy. He's not happy much these days, but is it relief? Is that the feeling you get when everything you have been anxious about, that you've been paralyzed with fear and indecision about, that you just want clarity about, just comes tumbling out of you like boulders in an avalanche? Tsar lima od uplishtim nechamim biv Elohim sar me alive lo anani od gam bin yan neviim gam b'chalamod ve'akra lecha lo dieni ma'aseh. I am very troubled, and Plishtim are fighting with me, and God has turned away from upon me, and does not answer me anymore, even through prophets, even through dreams. So I'm calling you to let me know, what do I do? And Shmuel, for the last time, is the bearer of bad news to Shaul, the man who he anointed as king.
Why are you asking me when God has turned away from you and become your adversary?
Shaul's face, we must imagine, begins to fall.
Why ask Adonai Elohim shivet me v'ikra Adonai es ha'maloch miyodecho v'yitnach v're'ach l'dovin.
God did himself exactly like the word he put in my hand. God has torn the kingdom away from you and given it to your fellow, and given it to David.
Shaul's eyes go bright with anger at the name of this stupid shepherd boy with the ruddy cheeks and blue eyes who took everything from him. His fame, his glory, his people, even his family, his children.
Because you did not listen to the voice of God and did not carry out his anger.
Shaul bristles at the mention of the failure that tore his kingdom away from him, still not understanding exactly what it is he did wrong.
Therefore, this is the thing that God will do to you on this day.
Why then, Adonai God is Israel,
and God will also give the Israelites with you into the hands of the Plishtim.
His heart falls at hearing about the impending loss on the battlefield, and he begins to wonder, if we lose the battle, what will happen to
And tomorrow you and your sons will be with your sons, and also the camp of the Israelites will be given into the hands of the Plishtim.
The witch snaps out of the trance, and Shmuel is gone. And that's it. Shaul and his family, and all he fought to protect, will be gone by tomorrow, joining Shmuel in wherever the hell it is he went after he died. He collapses to the floor, part overwhelmed by the enormity of what he has been told, part out of plain weakness, because he hasn't eaten or drank all day. Was he fasting for some reason? Or was he simply too anxious, too paralyzed by fear to eat? The witch sees, from what her perspective, must have been an astonishing sight. The king, the seat of power in the kingdom, whose name didn't even need to be mentioned to provoke fear in her, is now a quivering mess on her floor. The same considerable height which immediately impressed the entire kingdom now lies there too weak to move. And though she may be in violation of the commandment against witchcraft, she is still recognizably a classical stereotype of a Jewish mother. Ve'ata shema na gam ata b'kol shivcha secha, ve'esima lefanecha pat lechem ve'achol,
So now you listen to me. Let me set before you a bit of food. Eat, and then you will have strength to go on her way. She literally commands him to eat. A person who was a stranger when he walked in. A person that she didn't have a meal to prepare when he walked in. Right? She literally commands him to eat. And what a weird and awkward meal it must have been. A woman serving food to the most powerful man in the nation. A man who could have easily ordered her killed. Who is now a quivering wreck. Who knows that this is likely his last meal before he dies. And what was going through Shmuel's mind here during this meal? We don't know. The Psukim don't tell us that kind of thing as a general rule. And anything to that effect that I have offered so far has really been my own interpretation. Was he scared? Was he sad? Was he regretful? I don't know. The Pasuk doesn't tell us. What I do know is that Shaul finally knew with certainty what would happen to him. And that's all he wanted. To know. To know for sure. I bet that meal tasted good. Years earlier, a man, a tall, well-built, handsome man, a head taller than anyone else, is looking for his father's donkeys, but he cannot find them. Not by normal means. Not in the hill country of Ephraim, not in the district of Shalisha, not in the district of Shalim, not in the entire territory of Binyamin. He cannot find these donkeys through normal means, no matter how hard he tries. The man turns to his servant and says, "Well, we've looked everywhere. Time to go back before my dad starts worrying about us." But the servant has an idea. "Hineina ish Elohim be'ir hazos." There is a man of God in that town. "Va'ish nichbad kol asher yidaber bal yavo." And the man is highly esteemed. Everything that he says comes true. "Ata nelchasham." Let us go there now. "Ulai yagid lanu astarkenu asher halachnu aleha." Perhaps he will tell us about the errand on which we set out. The man is intrigued by this possibility. Everything he says comes true? That sounds good. But there's a problem. "Vihinai nelech uman navi laish." But if we go, what can we bring the man? "Ki halacham azal mikilenu," for the food in our bags is gone. "Uchura in lahavi," and there is nothing we can bring to the man. "Le'ish Elohim," to the man of God. "Ma'itanu," what have we got? And the servant responds, "Hinei nimtzavi adi reva shekel kesef." I happen to have a quarter shekel of silver. "V'nasati le'ish Elohim," and I can give that to the man of God. "V'hiyidlanu at darkenu," and he could tell us about our errand. I want to point out two things parenthetically. Not related to the theme here, but it'll play up later on, okay? Though the word used for the person who sees the future through supernatural means here is ro'eh, as you'll see if you look at Pasuk 9, that will point out that the term used back then was ro'eh for what is now called a navi, a prophet. Interestingly, the word navi appears in the Pasuk, right? "Ma navi le'ish Elohim," right? It's conspicuously used here. I don't know if that's anything, but it struck me as interesting. Number two, the preference expressed here is for food first, then money. We don't have any food to give this person. What can we do? Well, I have some money. Let's give him money, right? One thing I have noticed, and I'm going to play this up as we go on, is that this is consistent throughout Sefer Shmuel. Money is secondary to food as a currency or, you know, a method of payment or whatever. We'll discuss what that means as we go on for the type of culture that this was. I just want you to notice that right now. Okay, anyway. So the man agrees to go to the seer, and they arrive in town. And they ask some girls for directions to the seer. Here's how they respond. "Yeshinei lefanecha, maher, ata, ki hayom ba la'ir, ki zevach hayom la'am bebama." Kivoachem ha'ir kaintim zunotza, but terem yaleh ha'bamasa lechol, ki lo yachal ha'am ad bo'o, ki hu yivarech ha'zevach ha'acharechein ilchu ha'karim, v'ata alu ki otel kahayom timtzu unotel. He is up there ahead of you. Hurry, for he has just come to the town, because the people have a sacrifice at the shrine today. As soon as you enter the town, you will find him before he goes up to the shrine to eat. The people will not eat until he comes, for he must first bless the sacrifice, and only then will the guests eat. Go up at once, for you will find them right away. The commentators point out that this is a very long answer to a very simple question. What's going on here is that the man, as we've mentioned before, is tall and good-looking, and the girls are trying to keep him as long as they can. So they go up to the town, and the seer is coming up to greet them. His name is Shmuel. And last night, God told him that tomorrow he's going to meet a man from Binyamin. And that guy is the person Hashem once crowned as king, to save the Israelites from the hands of the Philistines. And as Shmuel comes up to this man from Binyamin, who's looking for his donkeys, God tells him, this guy is the one. And yeah, that makes sense. I mean, look at him. He's so physically impressive. He stops girls in their tracks and they just babble on. This guy looks like a king. But Shaul doesn't know any of this. He goes over to Shmuel. Hagidanali, Ezebet HaRoeh. Tell me, please, where is the house of the seer? Shmuel answers, Anuchi HaRoeh, I am the seer. Go ahead of me to the shrine. V'achaltem imi hayom, for you will eat with me today. V'shelachticha baboker, and in the morning I will let you go. V'chol asher b'levavcha agidlach, and I will tell you everything that you need to know, everything that's in your heart. Right? V'latonot ha'avdot lecha, and your doggies that you lost, hayom shloshet yamim, 3 days from today. Altasem eslibcha lahem. Do not concern yourself about them. Kinim too, because they've been found. Ulmi kol chemdas Yisrael halo lecha lechol beis avicha. And for whom is all of Israel yearning, if not for you and all your ancestral house? And for whom is Israel yearning, if not for you and all your ancestral house? Shmuel doesn't say it outright, but the implication must have been clear. The king, the people have been demanding, yearning for, it's you, Shaul. You're going to be king. Shaul is shocked. Halo Benyamini Anochi, but I am only a Binyaminite. Mikat ne Shiftei Yisrael, from the smallest of the tribes of Israel. Umishbachti Hatzei Ram Bikol Mishbachot Shiftei Binyamin. And my clan is the least of all the clans of the tribe of Binyamin. Lama Dibarti Elai Kedavar Hazeh. Why do you say such things to me? Shaul can't believe that he, of all people, will be crowned as king. Despite the fact that he is immediately physically impressive, despite the fact he looks like a king, despite the fact when he walks into the room, people go like, yeah, that's a king. He can't believe that he's going to be king. But Shmuel doesn't attempt to assuage his fears just yet. They have a meal to eat. Shmuel brings Shaul into a hall where a festive meal is already underway with 30 guests. And he's already instructed the cook to set aside the whole thigh of the sacrificed animal, traditionally given to the Kohen, for Shaul. So Shaul eats a meal, surrounded by well-wishers, fresh off receiving the news that it would be him crowned as king of all of Israel. And not only that, he can rest easy about his donkeys. They've been found. No reason to worry anymore. Everything's right with the world. I bet that meal tasted good. At first glance, the two stories of Shaul, one at the end of his reign and one at the beginning of his reign, could not be more different. The mood is completely different. Shaul is a bright young man at first, bitter and broken later. What happened to this promising, strapping, attractive man that broke him to the point that he is sprawled out, collapsed on the floor of a witch? What happens between the two stories? Power happens. Shaul was given power. And more than power corrupts, power reveals. Power is the ability to do what you want. Power reveals what you want when nobody is able to stop you. And what you do with power reveals what was in your heart the whole time. The two stories I mentioned actually parallel each other pretty closely. We start off with Shaul being unable to gain some sort of knowledge, whether it's the location of his donkeys or the outcomes of the battle with the Plishtim. We are told of his process, the different avenues he tried to obtain that knowledge, and we are told he is unsuccessful. He then, with the help of a servant, attempts to find that knowledge through supernatural means. In both stories, Shmuel comes up to meet him to give him that knowledge. Specifically up to meet him. The word Oleh is used in both contexts. And in both, that knowledge pertains to his monarchy. Both stories are punctuated with a meal after Shaul receives that supernatural knowledge pertaining to his monarchy. But it's obviously the contrasts that make the comparison interesting. In the first story, he seeks knowledge through permitted means. In the latter story, it's through forbidden means. In the first story, he is given good news about his kingdom. In the latter, bad news. In the first, the meal is festive, surrounded by people who have prepared for his arrival. In the latter, it's an awkward meal alone with someone who did not expect his arrival. But there's a through line here, and it's the character trait that it comes to define Shaul. Shaul cannot deal with uncertainty. He cannot not know. Before he has power, that manifests merely as a willingness to go consult a seer about his donkeys. But as he gains power, it transforms into something different. An inability to deal with uncertainty will manifest as fear. Fear of upsetting people, fear of making decisions, fear of confronting danger, fear of competitors to the throne. And when he is uncertain of the loyalty of those around him, that fear will morph into paranoia, which will suck him down deeper and deeper until he's totally isolated, willing to kill anyone who he suspects of collaboration with enemies. The need for certainty that we see at the beginning of his career as king is revealed to be a deep insecurity, and before he knows it, he's knocking at the door of a witch, begging her to give him some access, any access, to the certainty only the dead possess, whose ranks he will soon join. Sefer Shmuel is a book about power, and what power reveals about those who would wield it. The stories in the Torah, and stories of much of Jewish history, are not stories of people who wield power. They are stories of slaves, they are stories of Jews in ghettos and Jews under the rule of other governments. Sefer Shmuel is a book about the Israelites on their land with a king who has power. And the question that Sefer Shmuel asks is, what happens when we are given power? What does it reveal about us? It is a particularly pressing question right now. What power reveals about us. And that is a question that I'm wanting to explore in this podcast. This podcast will be discussing Sefer Shmuel and the story of David, telling a story with an eye on what it tells us about the wielding of power and human susceptibility to corruption of power. I hope you will join me on this journey. Stay tuned for the next episode.